Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 62, the morning after. It's a beautiful day. It's getting warm. Spring is here. It's again another episode without my lovely co-host, Jen Tulloch. And I want to congratulate her on a great run in the play On the Head of a Pin. Today is her last day, and she's a badass. She's been playing a really serious role in it. So I can't wait to see all the humor that she unleashes on us next week. In studio today, a man living the dream. Every day is a vacation for Brian Block, general manager of La Finca y El Mar in Nicaragua. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thank you, Jesse.
We'll chat with him about beach life and what it's like to run a restaurant in a foreign country. Also in studio, Aaron Sylvester of Blue Hill, New York, and Pam Stubbs of Tertulia. They are here as representatives of Chardonnay's corporate team. We will get together and discuss a recent New York Post article about a columnist's obvious visit to our mythical restaurant that celebrates all bad food and wine trends. So I can't wait for that. But first, tales from the front of house.
It's your favorite story. It's front of house. It's a front of house.
Front of house, our segment about the wild stories members of the front of house endure on a daily basis. Keeping in the same vein as last episode's cat rat tale, I'd like to introduce my better half, Miss Erin Sylvester.
Hello, Jesse.
Tell me your front of house story.
Oh, I feel so inadequate compared to Jen Tulloch's amazing renditions with accents and characters. But
that's okay. You know, I mean, when the dame is here, it's a beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing.
But we don't always need to have British humor to get our stories across.
Except that you do. Yeah, so no, my front of house story, I've had several, of course, being in the industry for 1 million years, give or take a few. Yeah, it was a busy Friday night, and it was right after the New York Times review that this particular restaurant had received, and we were packed. Just completely, the entire entryway of the restaurant was a sea of people. So I was speaking to my table, and I saw them, all of their heads turned in a particular direction, and it was not at me, and it wasn't because I was that boring. And so I looked in the direction they were looking, which was at the sea of people, and all of the faces in the sea of people were all looking upwards past me. And I thought, oh my God, why is every single person looking, you know? So I turn and I look, as my table does, because we're all coming to realize this in the same moment. And I see on this built-in shelf, this little tiny mouse walking above my two tables. It's on the molding of the shelf, and it's just inching its way towards the end in the corner. And the table sees it, and they freak out. They all jump up and run out of the banquette and the booth, leaving me. And I have been very, very trained by my firefighter father to, when you see something, somebody has to keep their eyes on it. You can't leave anything. So I had to assume.
Well, you never know where it's going
to
go.
Yeah. So the little tiny mouse goes to the end of the shelf, and then all of a sudden it's dangling over. Somehow it's got two legs on the top and its little arms are flailing, and then it just boop drops like 8 feet from this high shelf right onto the banquette right in front of me. People are screaming, and I had to fix the problem. I grabbed one of the napkins that the guests had left, one of those cloth napkins, and bundled it up really fast into the napkin.
Like a little package that's like just a little like package around.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, it wasn't quick and scurrying off. I think the upstairs, you know, apartment had been doing construction, and I think it had been poisoned or something. Because when it landed on the banquette, it was like a little dazed and stunned. And but yeah, that happened. You know.
So then what is the aftermath of a mouse incident in a busy restaurant?
Well, there were two scenarios. I had two different tables that had gotten up and, you know, run away. One table were obviously New Yorkers, and they just sat back down. They were like, oh, whatever, you know, these things happen. And then, unfortunately, my other table, they were tourists from Japan, and they were traumatized. Completely traumatized. They sat in silence for the rest of their meal. We bought their whole meal. I mean, the other table, we just, you know, got them a pitcher of sangria, and they were really happy and just enjoyed laughing. And, you know, I got a lot of credit for capturing the mouse, but yeah, the other table could not handle it.
They sat in silence, not even talking to each other. They were angry at each other for the mouse being there. Even
I think they were fully traumatized.
Fully traumatized.
Don't know.
I'm proud of you catching the mouse.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking too.
I caught the mouse.
You caught the mouse. But what did you do? Did you?
Well,
leave him to freedom or
no? Then I gave him to the manager.
Oh, okay.
And I never asked a question as to what he did.
Almost like a proud,
with the little tiny
proud cat handing it over.
Seriously, I left it on the mat. There you are. I don't know.
Well, we're gonna take a break. We're gonna come back with Brian Block, general manager of La Finca y El Mar in Nicaragua. We'll ask him about the pests he has in Nicaragua. I don't even know if I want to know.
It's getting bumped.
You're listening to Pretty Boy Swag by Rectech on heritageradionetwork.org.
And we're back here on The Morning After. Have you ever wanted to escape New York, travel to an exotic land, and magically do the same job you had in New York, except now you're not in New York, and you were actually learning another language, and you're looking at the ocean on a daily basis? Oh, and you were very, very tan as well? Well, it is my great pleasure and slight jealousy to introduce Brian Block, general manager at La Finca y El Mar, near Rivas, Nicaragua. Right? There, it actually doesn't even have a town.
So
you're so remote.
It's in the states of Nicaragua. Rivas is the area, and Tola is the nearest kind of main town.
Okay.
Limon is two different towns next to each other, Limon 1 and Limon 2, because a river that runs through it, so they had to...
A river runs through it.
Exactly, name two different towns. But, I mean, where I work is called Rancho Santana. It is a 3,000-acre development. So it kind of is the town in a lot of ways. You could buy lots, you could buy houses, and that's mainly most of the area. We have a lot of it is kind of sectioned off to be natural, and it is very natural. The roads are all never going to be paved more than they are. They're just kind of dirt roads. I guess the idea is Santa Barbara in the 40s, which if we all remember correctly... what that was like to be in Santa
Barbara. I definitely remember
40s.
Santa Barbara in the 40s.
Exactly. So, no, but I guess people who talk about California, like, it used to look like that before it became what it is now. So that's kind of what it is. It's just a hotter California.
So what were you doing in New York before you got this great opportunity?
Well, I mean, super long story short, I lived in New York since, like, 2005. I bartended at... a restaurant that was also attached to a hotel for several years, and it was union. I made pretty good money there, and at a certain point got to be able to take enough vacation time and that I kind of got hooked on vacation, decided, you know what, I'm just going to save as much as I can and take off and travel. I traveled through South and Central America for like 6 or 7 months, and Nicaragua became the place that I fell in love with the most. I loved a lot of places, but it was definitely like not developed. You could really see a lot of potential, and the people there were really super friendly. So I had been back a bunch of times. Anyone who knows me knew that I kind of wouldn't stop talking about how I was going to find a way to be in Nicaragua. So I would check, you know, real estate things. I had a list of like 5 ways in which, you know, I could potentially make a move down there. And all of them seemed kind of ridiculously implausible because I don't make enough money to save money to like, oh, I'll just invest. Like, I'm not from a bunch of money. And like, all of my very wealthy friends weren't like ponying up to give me money for it. But like getting a job seemed like the least likely possibility, because I mean, it's Nicaragua is the second poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. So it certainly doesn't have a lot of employment opportunities for anyone, let alone, you know, me. But in my internet trolling on a Craigslist ad, which people still can't believe Craigslist is how that happened, they were looking for a chef to move down there. And I basically replied saying that I'm not a chef, but that they should have me move down there.
So I'm not at all what you're asking for.
Yeah.
But
I mean, that's basically what I said is like, look, like I'm not a chef. Although if you want me to cut some stuff up, like I know my way around a kitchen. But if you have a restaurant, then, you know, I've done every other job in a restaurant. So, I, you know, maybe you could use me in some sort of a way.
Brian, I think you also had some amazing letters of recommendation.
I did.
That were written by myself and someone else sitting over here.
I have a
one-on-one conversation.
Well, you know, that really, to me, so I mean, like, whatever, long story short, like, I, you know, basically a couple of back and forths at first. She was like, no, I'm really looking for a chef. And then, well, no, actually, maybe. And then 2 months later, after hanging out with my good friend Jesse Kiefer, I checked my emails and it was, oh, everything's changed. And now maybe we do need someone. But, you know, the kind of idea of how would you move down there? How would you make that happen? Like, for me, the fact that, you know, several people in this room were recommendations for me for the job down there is I just kind of keep up with people who I like and have worked with people who I like. And the people I like tend to be, like, good at what they're doing and kind of, like, driven. So I feel like that's kind of led a little bread trail for me to follow in every job I've had that kind of makes it easy to look back and have people that can help you out if I had lost my job or if I was looking for a new one who could help me, you know, look for another job and give me recommendations or give me, you know, referral or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that I just really wanted something so specific, like Nicaragua is pretty specific.
Absolutely.
And that the jobs I'd chosen while here were kind of, you know, setting up so that I could be in some sort of a way of not just being like an hourly employee and have some sort of a skill that would be beyond like, not like it's a lowly job at all to say you're like a server or a bartender, but, you know, some sort of credential.
So not only are you moving to another country to do a job that you actually do have a good amount of experience to do, but you have to go there and speak another language. How much Spanish did you actually speak before you got there?
They asked me before, and one of the emails of like the job description was that they were looking for both Spanish and English, 7 out of 10 or higher. So the job I had...
That was how you had to rate it?
Yeah. So I felt pretty confident about my English. The place I worked in New York at the time, I had a lot of people there spoke Spanish, and so I would ask around without telling them why I was asking, you know, like, oh, what would you rank my Spanish? Like, you know, 1 to 10. And so I got like anywhere from like 4 to like 8.
Oh,
and so it was like, yeah, it was more like, you know, who wants to suck up to the boss or like who is going to like give me some, you know, low ball. But so I responded back, you know, to the chef saying, well, this is kind of, she's like, oh, I don't know, it'll be fine. You're really more like getting everyone up on English more than you are, you know, it'll be enough to, you know, communicate. I was like, okay. So getting down there, that's in a way true, but I don't really know what would have happened if I spoke less Spanish than I did going down. That would have been a lot harder.
You wouldn't have been talking to too many people.
You'd be charading.
Exactly. A lot of hand movements. And
my biggest skill in Spanish is that I have little shame in the fact that I know that what I'm saying is not probably grammatically correct. and that I don't think I'm fooling anyone, like, with my appearance, that I would be fluent in Spanish. So the fact that I can, like...
I mean, you're very tan. I would be confused.
Well, now. But no, yeah, so, I mean, you know, kind of pull it together. I knew a lot of restaurant words. I know a lot more now. That was my first 2 weeks there, was, like, words that I use all, like, tray and ashtray. Finally became like, oh my god, how do you say that? Like, it's driving me crazy how many times I have to... You know, the thing for the...
Cigarillos.
The dust from your cigarette, you know, like, that finally I figured out.
How do you say ashtray?
Cenicero.
Cenicero.
Cenicero, or bandeja would be a tray.
So, you are general manager of La Finca y El Mar. What is the restaurant like? What's the concept?
So, La Finca y El Mar, which literally translates into, like, the farm and the sea.
So, farm to ocean?
Well, it is all... As much as we can grow and produce for the restaurant, we are growing at a several-acre garden that is in the grounds. We have someone who comes by and brings a big bucket of fresh produce, like, through the restaurant into the kitchen every day. We also buy all of our seafood from a local fisherman's co-op. So, I mean, literally, you'll look out from the restaurant, and they're not using, like, fishing lines. It's actually a pretty interesting thing, where they have wooden, almost like boards, kind of like you would have a kite.
Okay.
And it's just line, so they just throw it into the water and then kind of hand reel it. All of these hand gestures I'm making, by the way, you can obviously see over the over radio. So
he's throwing a line, and exactly. Then he is
picture the reeling
it in.
Exactly. He was doing the Macarena. He's totally lying right now.
But no, so you know, we get as much of it local as we can. The chef Callie Prezzano, shout out to Callie, is trained chef. She worked in San Francisco for years. She helped open up another resort near Granada in Nicaragua before coming here. And she's awesome. She really, believes. And that's kind of one of the things that's so awesome about coming down there, too, is that, you know, I'm kind of the white guy coming down working in Nicaragua, I guess. But I like to hope and think that I'm making opportunities for people who live there, and that to be doing so with a pretty kind of worldly, like, you know, farm to table approach, mm-hmm. I think is really exciting.
Well, and it's incredibly difficult to get anything there, I would imagine. So growing it yourself seems to make the most sense.
Well, in Nicaragua, they don't have laws as strict as you would have here about the use of pesticides and whatnot. So when you're buying food that is not organic, you really don't know what has been used on the food. There are certain things, like, because the area that I live in is an isthmus, so it's surrounded by two bodies of water, like a strip.
Wow,
there's a lake.
Your first time to be able to use that word.
Exactly.
I feel stupid. I didn't even... I was like, uh-huh, yeah.
No, well, this is right. Like things that I now pretend like, oh, this is the things that everyone would know. But I guess a big issue if you're right on the water is that a lot of the wind will come and kind of blow everything away. You get such strong gusts of winds coming off the Pacific. But because we have Central America's largest lake due east of us... we get a lake effect wind that hits the coast. Again, my hand gestures right now are really being extremely
very, very
demonstrative
helpful.
To everybody listening. But so I don't know exactly what that means, but it means that we don't get erosion, like blowing everything off. It's kind of two winds meet, which also makes it like a 9 out of 10, I guess, on wind power potential.
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot of wind turbines around.
Oh, really?
Nicaragua has a lot of geothermal power. Because there's a lot of volcanic activity there, and that also there are a big project to have wind turbines. When you drive by right on the lake, there's a ton of wind turbines, and that there's more. And I don't remember the date, maybe like 2020 or something. Nicaragua is supposed to be energy independent by that point. So, yeah.
So what is the clientele like? That's coming into La Finca y El Mar?
We have people who own houses and either live there full-time or part-time. They certainly come in. We have staff who work at Rancho Santana, and that, you know, we're kind of the restaurant. So if you don't want to cook, then you're coming in and eating food from us probably. But I would say most people are there traveling and are on maybe a week, maybe a two-week vacation. We have condos that are near the restaurant that you could walk from. There's casitas I live in, and some of those get rented out, but then there's, you know, a lot of houses that people rent out. But we have weddings. That's right now I'm in charge of the events as well. So we have weddings that can do up to 150 people, but they've usually been somewhere between like 60 and 80 people. So we have different event space that you can have, you know, private areas for a wedding, courtyard for dancing.
I guess to actually, I've just thought of this, to go back to like the produce and the fish. What is local produce in Nicaragua, and what fish are you guys getting predominantly?
So fish, we get mackerel, we get snapper, we get snook, which I guess if you're familiar with Florida, I guess it's popular around.
Yeah, I've heard of snook before. I think it is.
It kind of is like a sea bass ish mm-hmm. kind of fish. They have some tuna down there. We don't usually get tuna. I guess black tuna is more popular, and that's not really an eaten tuna.
Okay.
But we also get mahi-mahi. But, I mean, the snapper, there's five beaches in Rancho Santana. One of them has a little kind of cave area off the side. And I guess you could go spearfishing. But, I mean, some of the snapper we get there are, again, hand gestures wouldn't do it. But it's, like, the size of a dog, like, the size of, like, a Labrador. I mean, it's honestly, like, the snapper are, like, this Jeez. Big. It's really crazy. And, I mean, then, you know, we have the guy, like, butchering the fish. And, you know, that's the word, right? Butchering.
Gutting,
breaking down,
exactly. But like, you know, portioning them off into pieces. We have somebody who doesn't buy fish from us because they assume that we're buying packaged frozen fish because it's too well cut, which I think is pretty good.
Interesting. But what about produce?
Produce wise, I mean, you get a lot. Like, there's no potatoes where we are because the ground gets too hot. But yuca grows really well, so we have like homemade yuca chips. With sandwiches and whatnot. Like, we have cilantro down there. There's a local cilantro called culantro, which I guess is kind of like a sawtooth, or like, you know, the Thai cilantro that's like a larger leaf.
Okay.
I don't know. But it tastes exactly like cilantro, but it looks, you know, like a flat leaf. We have a lot of beets that we grow.
Any, like, citrus fruits or...
Yeah, well, they have, that's what's funny too, is the language thing. There's specific things about Nicaraguan, like, words that they'd use. And passion fruit, I always learned as maracuya, or if you were in, like, Argentina, maracuja. And that in saying that down there, they're like, oh, no, this, we call it calala. So passion fruit is called calala. We get a lot of passion fruit, and that's the number one thing I'm missing. Being away from there, I drink a lot of passion fruit juice down there.
So what has been, aside from the language barrier, the biggest, like, shock or the biggest challenge that you've had since you've been down there?
I mean, challenge, you can't just order something. Like, there's not delivery systems to get easy things. We have a dishwasher that has really, we've had so many different problems with the main kitchen dishwasher because the power goes out a lot, and when it comes back on, the power surges the computer because it's like a computerized mm-hmm. Dishwasher. Mm-hmm. And then that'll, like, burn the little touchpad that you use off. And that then, because we didn't get this machine through the, like, one company that you would get machines through in Nicaragua, it's, like, in order to get replacements, it's just forever. To get glassware, you know, I wanted to buy 100 wine glasses, and I could only get 60. You know, I wanted to get one line of silverware, and that you can get this fork, but not this knife, and that this one, but then that'll be in April, but then... You know, will it be in April? I have no idea. And that all of this is also me driving 2.5 hours to get to Managua to go to the, like, 3 restaurant supply stores that they have. Like, they didn't have the bins that you put bottles into that, like, rest in the ice for a bartender.
Okay.
So instead I had to buy, a plastic Lexan that would kind of serve as that purpose because they don't have that. There's a lot of things like that. I'm basically acting as a mule bringing back a lot of bar equipment from... my trusted Bowery stores.
So what, I mean, aside from all of that, is like making your life as a general manager easier, what are you missing about New York?
Wine, good wine. I definitely miss, like, cold weather fish, like oysters and mussels and clams. I can't really get that. Convenience. Like, again, we're like the only restaurant really. I mean, there's a couple of other restaurants, but, I mean, they're not really doing anything different. Like, if you got sick of fish tacos, then you're kind of, you know, out of luck. So, I mean, definitely having, like, oh, all of the different options. Like, I'm basically going back along with bar equipment with, like, whatever, like, chili paste and, like, fish sauce and, like, all kinds of ingredients to make the food that I'm eating taste different than it did every day for the last 3 months.
You miss your M&Ms?
They have M&Ms. Oh, okay. I can get peanut M&Ms right. down there.
Well, as long but as not, they have... not delivered to your apartment.
Yeah.
No, not delivered to my apartment.
A six-pack of
but
beer.
Then at the same time, it's like I'm like hopping into someone's like SUV and driving. Like driving is definitely different. You don't drive in New York City, you know, so that's weird to get used to.
So where can we check this out? Where can we, how can we get there?
So you...
Since it's a town that doesn't exist.
You would fly to Managua, which is the capital of Nicaragua. You could also fly to Liberia in Costa Rica, which has direct flights from Newark, and that you would cross the border, which isn't that big of a deal, and that we would basically be able to pick you up at the border. So that would be the easiest nonstop.
Anyone coming to visit?
I mean, you would have to contact us, and I would get our trusty transportation expert, Damien, to
Brian will
to
personally pick everyone up.
I could. Anyone in this room I would personally pick up. Not that guy who's looking in at me from the restaurant. He's not getting a ride.
There is a table right next to the window studio.
I think they're just looking at their own reflection in the window.
You can definitely see through.
He's definitely looking at us.
So he doesn't get a ride. But no, otherwise, if you flew into Managua, which is what I've always done, and, you know, you have a connecting flight through, like, Miami or Houston or something, it's not that big of a deal, I don't think. But you would then get a ride, or if you wanted to drive down, it would be a 2.5-hour drive southwest to get there. But in driving, that's another crazy Nicaragua thing. Managua has 2 million people, and there's no street signs or addresses in anything in the entire city. So it's the kind of thing where, like, oh, well, we're, like, 3 blocks away from the whatever statue is, like, how you would get directions. But then that statue might have been destroyed in 1972, and that's still how the directions would be given. So it's a confusing city to drive through. And then upon driving on the highways, it's not as difficult, but the highways don't really have names. They're, like, the name of, like, the highway on the way to this town. So we have signs, and they have actually helped me in driving, that signs to get to Rancho Santana, but it's a little bit crazy.
How's GPS there? Non-existent?
I think that you would have GPS.
But you don't have an address to put in.
Yes. No, you don't have an
minor
address.
Minor problem.
I mean, you would have, like, again, I don't even know how much the map, I mean, you could actually look on Google Earth, and it gives you a pretty good idea. But there's not so many things that you're getting, like, so completely turned away. And the main road that would go down is the Pan American Highway, which again is kind of a 2-lane road that local things, Pelibwe is an animal that is like a goat sheep kind of hybrid. And that's like a local protein. We have them growing on the lot, but you also might have to stop the car because there's, you know, a family
a herd of
Pelibwe going by the road or something, exactly.
It's amazing. What's
I really want you to have centaurs or something.
You can also like Rancho Santana on Facebook.
Oh, yeah, you can. You're professional.
I wanted to know the website also.
You get little updates about, like, horse riding on the beach and, you know.
It's pretty nice, right?
Surfing lessons.
So you can like us on Facebook. You could go to www.ranchosantana.com and that you could go to the restaurant directly at La Finca elmar.com.
And what is the average temperature?
It's pretty much like 80 degrees all the time.
I'm going my next vacation. I'm going to Rancho Santana.
Oh, please.
I think we're all planning on going
absolutely.
At some point.
Please.
Whenever Jesse says I, she means we. So I'm beaming here as well.
No, please do. Everyone really should please come down. I'm almost a little bit torn because it's really nice. It's really not overdeveloped, so everyone who wants it to stay like that, come down. And everyone who wants to come down and, like, throw Doritos bags into the water, don't come down. Like, go somewhere else, if that's what you want to do.
We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with the corporate team from What's on the Menu at Chardonnay's.
This is the story of...
You're listening to Blazing Fish Cakes by RecTech on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
And we're back on The Morning After. It's time for what's on the menu at Chardonnay's.
Ooh, uh-huh. What's on the menu at Chardonnay's?
I have appointed my team in studio as Chardonnay's corporate team. This week, Kyle Smith of the New York Post wrote an article titled, You Got Served. I will read you all a little excerpt of it, because it is you know, really important to me to kind of take his words and see what we can do better at Chardonnay's.
I mean, the New York Post is the most reputable news source.
It's the paper of record, isn't that what they call it?
Venerable.
It's the paper of record.
Venerable.
It begins, hi, exclamation point. Well, hi there, exclamation point. I'm doing great this evening, thank you. It's quite rainy out there. You're absolutely right. I guess we're both really super stoked to be here in this restaurant that's more crowded than my junior high school cafeteria. Imagine the excitement eating food in public. And your name is Jason? Jason, I don't care. Just bring me some food and go away. Waiters and waitresses at New York's self-consciously hot restaurants need to cool it a bit. I don't care how charming you are on your auditions. I'm not here to make friends. Frankly, garçon, I don't even need to know your name. By the time you tell me about the specials, I've already forgotten it. You're a servant, so serve. Strangely, New York waitrons, my generic term for both sexes of waitstaff, which I love that he says that he has coined the term waitron, which I think we were already talking about how we heard this in the 90s in Santa Cruz. I think that's where it was actually coined.
I've heard of waitrons a bunch of times. That's like one of my favorite words.
So he did not coin it. It's not his term, regardless. They don't even serve anything anymore. They seem to view themselves as party planners or masters of ceremonies. After taking my order, they disappear and give way to a series of surly busboys who do the food delivery, the clearing, the refilling of the water glasses. So he continues on with this rant, and he eventually at the end outs himself as a bad tipper, saying he tips 11%.
He talks a lot about France.
He talks about
service in France.
He talks about the service in France and how it is more, it's less hands-on, and he likes that element of it. Now,
well, he knows about that because he makes a point to visit France once or twice a year. Just so he's someone who can visit.
He is a world traveler is what he's trying to tell us.
I'm sure they love him there.
I mean, yeah, because he tips 11% on top of their already like huge hourly
salary.
I don't know if it's huge.
No.
It's a
he made sure to make a point. He does not, in fact, even tip 11% there. That's one of the joys.
A mere euro,
one or two euros, exactly.
I mean, so basically, as Chardonnay's corporate team, I'm assuming he went to our flagship store in Times Square, our flagship Chardonnay's, and I just want to propose to you guys: how do we make our servers less nice? I mean, that's really what it seems like he wants. I don't feel offended because I know nowhere I've ever worked as somebody who's like walking up and be like, hey, my name is Jason. It's great to see you. How you doing?
It kind of makes me wonder where he's dining because...
Exactly. I don't know where in New York City has someone told you their name.
Unless you ask for it. So.
I worked with one person who was like that and she had to go. She got fired. she really was like,
well, it's not Ruby Tuesdays.
Blah, blah, blah.
Well, I have a policy to never hire anyone named Jason. So that's kind of now proving pretty key in hearing that story.
I mean, I did try to get him on the show, and I want to know like where this kind of hatred or anger came from. And you know what? Personally, like, I don't need to have a full on conversation with my server, but I do want them to seem happy to be at work, and that's the whole thing.
Well, and they were
considerate.
The post then I saw again on post on Facebook then opened up the forum for servers to come and write in letters. It's a quite lengthy amount of letters. They actually said they cut it down because it was so long. But if you look, I mean, there's responses to everything of, why don't you just take your $150 and cook at home, which is a good point, to much more personal letters about, you know, hey, my parents were Irish immigrants and they've, you know, been able to put me through school by working in restaurants and blah, blah, blah. So it was interesting to see all the responses that they got to this guy's, which I thought was kind of a pointless article to begin with. I mean,
totally.
And what was it? What, it isn't really even worth the space they gave it.
I mean, it did, as part of the Chardonnay's corporate team, it did give me a little insight. He really, at one point, mentioned how cute a golden retriever is and how he really enjoys golden retrievers. And, you know, it reminded me of when we hired golden retrievers at Chardonnay's. But the
it was just like a sweeps kind of thing. Or, yeah. You know, like, well, restaurant week kind of thing.
But every time the golden retriever would clear a plate, they would just bring it right back to the guests. So, it sounds nice in theory. Just doesn't pan out in practice.
Well, I mean, I feel like Chardonnays would have a list of appropriate phrases that you can say to the table, and that's really cutting out all of the problem of Jason's kind of extemporaneous speaking, is that, you know,
it would be very scripted.
Yeah, exactly. Script. I mean, that's in the employment packet that you get.
Here is the script that you read.
Yeah, I mean, it's the five pillars of Chardonnays. Service. Yeah, I mean, you certainly have service points.
Okay, that'll be next episode. Chardonnay is absolutely the
employee handbook.
Yeah, the summary of the employee handbook.
By the way, I've been talking. Chardonnay is a spread worldwide now. It is definitely in Central America.
Oh, wow.
And the wine list.
Fast, it's good.
I think that the wine list for Chardonnays is definitely a whole episode that you have unto itself of what is the wine list.
I agree with you. The wine list would be.
There's a million incantations of that. You can, be all Chardonnay.
Well, I'm saying there's an Opus One vertical. You know, I mean, vertical tasting, like Robert Mondavi.
I was going to say, there's a lot of Mondavi going on, and that we can't even talk about that in the next 5 minutes.
I mean, Bonnie Doon, Vin de Glacier.
Of course.
Honestly, you could just use my father's cellar, a.k.a. the shelf on the bookshelf. There's jug wine and all sorts of things going on there. Yeah, I just got back
Ernest
from being
Ernest and Julio
home.
Gallo.
There's actually a Sylvester vineyards. And so I'm not even kidding. There is a Sylvester Vineyards and
do they
all
have White Zinfandel?
Yes. They have it's actually called Blush.
Blush. And we have it at home.
it's actually called Blush. Jack, it's been great to have you here. Joe is usually here, but our good buddy Jack is in studio today. Can you send us out with another Chardonnays? I love it so much. And reminds me of Jen, and we'll have her presence here.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mayor Jen.
This is the most beautiful jingle. We are so lucky that Sade actually did that for us.
He commissioned Sade for it.
It's been great to have you all in. Visit Pam at Tertulia. What's the exact address?
359 6th Avenue between West 4th Street and Washington Place.
Aaron's at Blue Hill.
75 Washington Place between McDougal and 6th Avenue.
And if you want to take a bunch of planes and automobiles, you can go visit maybe a boat or two. You can go visit Brian in Nicaragua. It's been great to have you all on the show. This is The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.